Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and joining me in the studio this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing okay. I'm a little sore. You know, I've been working out with the trainer.
I knew you
had. Have you noticed?
I knew you had. You do. You look how do you say it? Svelte.
Svelter? Yes.
So you've had a busy weekend because I know you worked out, and then you and I, we were on the clock Saturday out there with the JA folks.
That's right. Junior Achievement Radio is inching closer to the finish line, and we're getting ready to start. We had, about a dozen kids at JA doing a training session to get them ready for their shows. And so all you business owners out there, be on the lookout. A JA person might be calling you to invite you on a show for them to interview you to learn some of the wisdom about what made you such an awesome business person.
That's right. It's not trick or treat. They want to come do an interview and capitalize on your wisdom. And we had Dr. Tim Morrison out to visit with the kids, and we had
Bernie
out there, both of whom have their own shows. And I think that was probably one of the highlights of that whole program was them just fielding questions from the kids.
Right. It was neat to see the kids being so curious and wanting to make sure they do a good job. And then it was exciting to see them actually in front of the microphones and then practicing and doing what they're going to be doing shortly.
That was fun. And it wasn't all that smooth right out of the box, but it got smoother toward the end of the day, right?
And that's good, right?
That's
they learned
right.
something.
That's how it's supposed to work. We've got a great show today. It is my pleasure to introduce the Vice President of Business Development for Licensing Brands, Inc., Mr. Pete Canalicchio. Welcome to the show, man.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Well, we are glad to have you. So what do you think about that Junior Achievement connection? That's pretty cool, huh?
I think it's awesome. When I worked at Newell Rubbermaid, they had a program with Junior Achievement, and I actually got into classrooms down at North Springs High School. And so anything with Junior Achievement, I think, is fabulous.
Yeah. So get us caught up on licensing brands. You're a veteran. You've been in the studio before, so I know this is not new to you. But it's been a little while since we've talked. Get us caught up on what you guys are doing.
Yeah, no, it's been exciting last, I'd say, 4 or 5 months since I've been here. We've been working really strong and really hard on what we're deeming as the Brand Licensing Academy. So the idea is we want to be and are establishing ourselves as the educational leaders for brand licensing. And we just launched a really cool product called Brand Licensing Bootcamp. And as you can imagine, anything with the word boot camp in it is rigorous and intensive. And
do you lose weight while you do it? Because that would be nice. If you can include some weight loss, I think you can really get some people excited about that.
Well, I might have to ask you, Lee, on how maybe to incorporate that part. But you're definitely going to have your brain cells jumping around.
Yeah, you do it in front of a treadmill. This whole thing takes place on a treadmill.
That'll work. That'll work. With today's workout sessions and treadmills and videos, you can definitely do it. But in this case, what we're offering in the boot camp is 1 hour. It's three videos of my presenting on the subject of what is brand licensing, what is the brand licensing process look like, what are the pitfalls to avoid. And the cool thing about it is it's videotaped in a very high quality. It was actually videotaped in HD, but we've had to pull it down just a little bit so it can be streaming video. But the audio and the video is exceptionally well done. And then behind it are about 50 pages of presentation material, another 30 pages of a mastery guide. So you're going through as I'm speaking, filling in the blanks and really bringing this information into your brain. And then each section, and there's three sections, have a review of questions, summary, and checklist. And finally, we top it off with a brand licensing glossary. So you have any words that you're not familiar with, we're going to make sure you know what they stand for.
Now, you're a nice enough guy, but why should I be listening to Pete Canalicchio? Do you have some specific background that makes it worthwhile to listen to all these videos? Or could Lee do it just as easily?
Well, Lee could do the workout part, maybe.
I can't do that. But Pete's been around the block, the brand licensing block, a few times.
This is not something you just decided, hey, I think I'll try out this brand licensing thing for a little
while. Why don't you share some of your background, Pete?
Sure.
You've kind of spanned the globe doing this thing.
It's really kind of cool how I got involved in brand licensing. I was working at the Coca-Cola company. I joined in 1990.
You might have heard their brand.
They're doing a pretty good job with their whole branding thing.
They tend to be number one in the world, globally recognized, and they do all right for themselves. And it was a great place to learn about branding and about marketing. And so About halfway through my stint there, I was working on the Summer Olympics in 1996 in Atlanta.
Did you know you were at the halfway point? Did they tell you you were at the halfway point?
No, I thought I was at the 1/10th point, but oh well, what are you going to do about that? A big reorganization happened in 2000. But before that happened, I got asked to be part of a group called Worldwide Licensing and to head up a group called Event Merchandising, which was executing co-branded programs on behalf of Coke's investments in assets like the Olympics and World Cup and NASCAR.
You might have heard of those brands too.
I have, but I know where this is heading. I bet some of the people you work with didn't have a clue about how to pull this off and you had to help them figure it out, right?
No idea. And at the time, I was learning myself. So I started learning about brand licensing back in 1997. And we ended up putting on a program for the Nagano Olympics and ended up selling about $10 million worth of licensed merchandise, which was really cool. To see consumers just really cling to the products that we created because that was part of the way they memorialized that experience. And from there, I had the great opportunity to come back and help them with the Salt Lake Olympics. And then ultimately, I worked on a marketing agency where we did a little bit more licensing work. And then the Newell Rubbermaid Company hired me in 2005, and I ran the Rubbermaid Global Licensing Program for about 3 years.
Geez, do you hear all these company names? Newell Rubbermaid, Coca-Cola.
Yeah, so that's what gives him the authority to.
Okay,
to
I get it. I'm so. Can you get us inside track? I'd like to have some Lee Cantor bobbleheads. Do you know the bobblehead guys?
No, but I'm sure I can find them.
Sure, it's not hard.
I just think those would do really well in our market, don't you?
At least in my family, they would do well.
Now, the people that are purchasing this program, are they seasoned pros that want to get just that much better, that slight extra edge? Or is it primarily geared toward the novice like me that doesn't know the first thing about how to go about licensing?
Yeah. Stone, it's for more the novice like you who's wanting to learn exactly what this is and why should I care? But the cool thing is right behind that product, the Brand Licensing Bootcamp, we're coming out with a product called Brand Licensing Dynasty, which will be done the end of this month, early September. And that really is for somebody who has been in this space and wants to know more. And so now we're looking at 6 hours of video, audio, because all of this is downloadable to your iPhone or any kind of mobile device. And then behind that, about 500 pages of supporting documentation. So it's really a training program that you can go through over maybe, say, 6 month period and hone those skills.
And is brand licensing something that every business, do they have something that they can license? Or is there something that, maybe you have a product or a business or a service that isn't licensable?
That is true. And in fact, I was thinking about this the other day, writing a blog article, and as a thought leader, I was going through this, and the brands that are desirable are licensable. So if you have what you think is a brand, but on the hierarchy, maybe nobody knows about your product or your brand, so there's no awareness. Well, you have to have that first, and then you have to have preference, and then you have to have loyalty, and then ultimately insistence. So on that hierarchy, if you're up at the insistence level with which is where Coca-Cola stands right in many people's minds, then you're very desirable and very licensable. Now, the other side of the coin is for every brand owner, there needs to be manufacturers and service providers to license the brand. So it really does apply to all businesses that have that desire to enhance their own business by taking a brand with them on their next sales call, in their next meeting, etc.
So what is the easiest, or maybe the best way to ask is, which is the hardest, to brand an intangible, like a business talk radio network, or to brand a tangible, like a soft drink?
That's a great question. I think, to me, branding an intangible is maybe a little bit harder, but it's not unreasonable. I mean, there are plenty of intangible items out there or brands out there that are very powerful in the mind of the consumer. Let's take Facebook, for example.
Right.
People to the tune of 750 million, I think, are Facebook followers or members today. So intangibles can have the ability to grow much faster, and they can be indelled in the minds of consumers much more deeply. But for, the general kind of day in, day out, I think, tangible products may be a little bit easier to brand.
So, go ahead.
Well, I want to talk about the fear factor a little bit because in some ways, of course, we would love...
The brand fear factor?
Yeah, well, the licensing. I mean, in some ways, we'd love to license this concept, right? But but I mean, I get concerned about the quality if somebody in Minnesota has a business radio X.
You're talking about, are you trying to get free consulting?
That's why we have this show, is for the free consulting. So, you know, you meet a nice enough guy, and you get him set up in Minnesota, and you give him, you know, give him resources and consulting support to put up 5 or 6 studios. But, I'm not seeing that every day. That scares the hell out of me, I'll be honest with you.
Well, you know, you rightfully should be concerned. But about a year ago, I wrote an article called Don't Blame Brand Licensing. And that was an article written because
I like that.
Many folks were out there going, don't brand license. It is, you know, the scourge of, you know, of marketing and business. And I said, wait a second, time out. If you're going to give a brand to someone in your organization, you're going to make sure there's processes and policies and protocols and procedures to make sure that they do it right, correct?
Correct.
So why wouldn't you do that with your licensing partners?
Right. Have to be on the same page. I mean, they don't pick them as a licensing partner.
Exactly. The first thing is, and it's like, in the book Good to Great, you put the right people on the bus. Well, that's key and then critical for any relationship, especially for a joint venture or, you know, a strategic partnership like a licensing partner. So if you pick the right guys and they're best in class, number one, their standards are going to be high and maybe higher than yours.
Actually, exactly. That's probably true.
Aim higher. That's a lesson there.
And then give them guidelines and approval processes so, you know, they know what you're going to expect. You know, have an orientation. Take them through everything you're going to do. And then have them write a plan. And then review that plan. And then agree that plan. And then talk about that plan. And if you do that, they're going to do a good job for you. I'm sure, Stone.
So now it's a different strategy if I am the person licensing my service product or whatever it is, process, to somebody else. But what if I'm somebody else and I want to have access to that? Like, how does that arrangement work?
Well, we were just talking about having to be best in class. So if you want to have the ability to license a brand, I always think about it the way a relationship works, right? If you want somebody to desire you, then you better be desirable to that person, right?
But does it work? Who is the person that's seeking? Is it usually the brand that's looking for partners, or is it partners looking for brands?
You know, the other day I was talking to a friend over breakfast, and he said, you know, Pete, you're a matchmaker. And I said, okay, I hadn't thought of it about that way, but I guess I am, because there are both groups out there, brand owners who are seeing that they want to extend their brand into categories that they should be in, but can't do it themselves or looking for business partners. But when I was at the licensing expo, I ran into several folks who are manufacturers of really cool products who are looking for brands. And so it goes both ways, and they're both out there. And I think the more that we educate the populace, I think you're going to see more of the manufacturers, because right now the brand owners are saying, I want to go into this category. How do I get there? But now more and more when manufacturers and service providers learn that, hey, you can actually borrow a brand, you pay them a royalty to do that, they're going to get more involved, and it's going to make a more demand for the brand owners, which is good for the brand owners.
This elusive creature that we all refer to as the economy. And a lot of us are either saying or at least hearing, you know, the economy's in bad shape and all that. To whatever degree that's true, what impact is today's economy having on this arena? Is it causing people to circle the wagons and partner up and do a lot of branding and licensing type stuff? Or is everybody kind of cutting themselves off and just hunkering down and trying to weather the storm?
I think there's both camps, but I think the folks that heard the term from a good friend, a senior manager at a big Fortune 500 company, they call it leaning in. And the brands and the businesses that are leaning in are the ones that are going to be thriving as we get out of this recession. So those folks who are saying, I got to think smarter, not harder, are realizing there's other ways of growing their business. And that's why I want to get the message out about brand licensing, because it's a concept that's been around for a while, but lots of folks don't really understand it, or if they do, they don't know enough to get started. So I think this is a great way for them to make that move. But you got those other folks who are hunkering down, and they're probably missing an opportunity.
Now, does joint venturing have anything to do with this, or is this a form of joint venturing?
I really think it is a form of joint venturing. You know, the when you get two parties together and you're looking at a destination and there's a mutual interest in arriving at the same destination, that to me is effectively a joint venture. Now, lawyers would say, well, there's a very clear and distinct difference between a JV and a licensing arrangement. And I would say that's absolutely true. But ultimately, both parties in both cases are trying to arrive at the same conclusion or goal.
Because they're both trying to win. I mean, both sides of this equation are trying to sell more stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And you're finding more and more brand owners are realizing the best way to get successful programs is to engage with their manufacturers and their service providers, their licensing partners. It's not a novel concept, but sometimes, the legal side of things, they'll say, well, look, if you get too involved, then, where does the line of responsibility stop? And therefore, if something goes wrong, we're going to be more on the hook. But ultimately, if you want to drive to a particular destination, the more hands kind of coming together and minds thinking about it, the better success you're going to see.
Now, when you're out selling this service, what's your go-to client story where you underscore the benefits or talk about the mistakes that can happen if you don't take advantage of counsel like yours? Do you have a go-to story or two that you share?
Well, I usually like to talk about the two different models that I've seen, the Coca-Cola model, which is really about how do you use brand licensing to support marketing, and that's what they do so fabulously, right? That's what they had me do. They were sponsors of big events like the Olympics, and they wanted to take advantage of the fact that they could license merchandise. So not only did they create this cool idea in the mind of consumers, hey, come be part of this Olympics. You may not be able to afford a ticket, but you can have an Olympic experience. And then, by the way, we offer you merchandise you can buy to memorialize that experience. And if you put it on your wall, you're going to be looking at Coca-Cola for decades, which is really kind of a cool concept of having
that
somebody.
That whole pin thing, like how smart was that?
I think it's brilliant. They've done a pin trading center, for the last, since 1988 Olympics. And in fact, I'm working on a book called Lasso, the World's Greatest Brands. And the first chapter is going to be about the Nagano Pin Trading Center and how we, the brands, Coca-Cola and the Nagano Olympics, drove, 3,000 Japanese to stand in line in the middle of the night on a cold February day. So it's very powerful.
Right. And that's something, like you said, it's staying on that wall forever. And then the brand comes along for the ride forever.
Exactly. I mean, I think in the case of these Japanese who came to the Nagano Olympics, those pieces of licensed merchandise that Coca-Cola created with the Nagano Olympic Committee, they're going to be heirlooms. I mean, these things are going to go down for generations, which is incredible. Then you have the other side, which is the Rubbermaid side, which is about really driving success of the business by getting into categories that are meaningful products that consumers use every day. And what am I talking about? Mailboxes and bath mats and
strollers and
pens. Well, Graco makes their own strollers, but the idea though is spot on, Lee. It's products that we use every day as consumers, and that's the part I think less and less folks know that they can actually get involved in. So you're saying, wow, I have a product like a stepladder. I can license the Rubbermaid brand, put it on that product, and sell it in the marketplace? And the answer is, yeah, you can. In fact, companies have done that very successfully. So what do you do?
Like make the top step rubber or something? Does it have to have some sort of Rubbermaid flair to it when you do that?
I love that you asked that question. And in fact, that is the key and critical piece, is building the attributes of the brand into the product. So in this case, it was a three-step ladder. Every step was wider and a little bit deeper. Then Rubbermaid has a dynamic ribbon or curve, and they built that into the rubber, and it was raised higher so it was more stable. And then because Rubbermaid's about storage and organization solutions, the top was a tray, and that tray had all kinds of holes designed for screwdrivers or spatulas or you name it. And the whole thing was very balanced, very sturdy. So a woman in her kitchen who wanted to get to the top shelf would feel very secure in doing that and, be able to put her plates on that tray. And so the whole thing was done just fabulously. And as I said, in some cases, manufacturers will actually elevate the brand equities and positioning because they do a better job in that category than you can do yourself.
Now, is that something an inventor did? Is that a place for an inventor to kind of participate in brand licensing?
Pete did all this. Didn't you? Yes. Have you been listening?
It was in the weekends in the garage.
Yeah, no. That's a great question. I'm glad you brought it up, Lee. In the case of this company, and in fact, I've talked to them, so they've given me permission to talk a little bit about them. This is a company called Tricam, which is based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. What they had was tremendous product innovation. And so they had some really smart folks in R&D who were building these attributes into their products. In fact, they had a garden dumping cart that had, two patented piece of technology. It pulled in such a way that it sat on four wheels, but when you lifted a little lever, and by the way, a woman weighing 100 pounds could lift that little lever, the two wheels on the front end moved to the middle, creating a natural fulcrum. The whole thing dumped without falling over, much better than your typical wheelbarrow.
Right.
But the invention thing is a really important part because inventors can play a big role in brand licensing because brands are always looking for ways to enhance their products and how they deliver on their promise. And so they're looking for consumer-driven innovation. And so if an inventor knows that they have a product concept that can help a brand who's got product in the marketplace today, then they can license their technology to that brand. That will enhance the brand's core product and then give them the chance then to then license the brand owner to license a new category. So it's a very symbiotic relationship, and it's fabulous how it can work. And so you got great minds out there who are inventing things all the time, who are showing these ideas to businesses, and they're picking up on them.
Now, you briefly mentioned a book. Before we wrap today, speak to the book a little bit. I'd just like to hear a little bit about why you're doing it, how you're going to collect the information that you want to put in the book. Let's do that before you wrap up today.
Sure, sure. What drove me to this decision was when I launched this company, Licensing Brands, Inc., a couple of years ago. I said I really want to be a thought leader on brand licensing, and I want to have a position, and I want to help folks understand the process better. Well, I ought to read as much as I can on the subject. So I started looking for books on brand licensing, and I went into my Barnes & Noble and Borders when they still were around and up on Amazon. And there were lots of books on brand licensing, but almost all of them were written by lawyers, and they were very...
But those were compelling.
Right.
You know, there's a place for that, but what I wanted to read was a book like a Malcolm Gladwell or Michael Lewis where, you know, there was a story to be told and really to bring in the exciting moments that were taking place in brand licensing and then educate through those interesting stories. And so I started doing some research and finding that, that was something I could do. I actually went to two book conferences and met with some really top-notch folks and publishers and editors and writers. And so what I want to do is interview the best and brightest out there who've either licensed the brand outbound. They've, they had the experience of taking their brand and putting it in the marketplace in a new category through licensing, or they were on the other side. They were that manufacturer or service provider who took a brand in and really blew it out in a really exciting way. And these are day in, everyday products like the stepladder example I gave earlier, or it could be more exciting like on the lines of the Olympic experience. But I want to be able to connect with readers, consumers who have ever thought of an idea and said, wow, I wonder if that could happen. I want them to read about it in this book. And I want the book to be very entertaining and one that just kind of brings a great light onto this exciting, passionate industry that I'm so passionate about.
Cool. And as I understand it, you plan on using radio as a platform to do some of these interviews. Got to warn you up front, it's not as easy as Lee and I make it look, right?
It's easier.
Actually, it's a heck of a lot easier. But, that may also lend itself to an audiobook or material that you can use the audio for your next round of the Academy stuff. So you got a lot of neat stuff coming up.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. And Stone didn't say it very clearly, but we're going to find out a way to work together. And so I'm going to be part of Atlanta Business Radio X's platform. And I'm very excited about bringing in folks. And that's another cool thing. When you interview someone for a book, that's pretty cool in itself because, hey, I might be part of a book, but the other opportunity is actually being on a business radio station and being able to be interviewed for that.
Well, so that explains it. Now I know what the manila envelope in the center of the table is all about.
There you go. It's all making sense.
It's all about value, right?
Well, Pete, thanks for coming down and visiting with us, man. This is exciting stuff.
I'm very excited, and I really appreciate the opportunity to come down and talk about it, and you guys are great hosts, and thank you very much for having me back again.
You are more than welcome. Until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guest this morning, Pete Canalicchio with Licensing Brands, Inc., and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.